Like notes through the hourglass, these are the songs of our lives.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I am an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and somebody who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Jeff Parker, Wendy Eisenberg, Maurice, Claire Say, Montana Roberts, Damon Lox. The list goes on, but this week I am so excited to have the one, the only, the inimitable, Lucy Liu. I've been a big admirer of Lucy's for a while. I was going back and kind of looking at all the stuff of hers I'd written about, and I think, like, I wrote about her back, so when Foxy D came back in 2021, and it originally started as a Substack thing before Substack felt really gross, which didn't take long. I wrote about her practice album, which I revisited it over the weekend, and yeah, like, she just makes music that is, it stops you in your tracks. That's really the best thing I can say about it. I love her work so much, and her newest album, which comes out this Friday on Orange Milk, Every Video Without Your Face, Every Sound Without Your Name, is in some way, it continues the story that she's been this telling through all of her releases over the last few years. It feels like it's leveled up in a way. There's something about this that I keep finding and hearing new things about, that it's like all the things I love about Lucy's work, but then it's elevated in a way, or it's, she's bringing in even like in new elements and combining it with these things that she's been exploring and doing so well for a while to just create something so new. I don't know. It's a hell of an album. And if you haven't heard it, you need to hear it. I said it's out on Friday. This is your quick reminder that if you like this show, enjoy the episode, please leave rating, review, wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you just love all the things and want to support it a little bit more, support Foxy Digitalis, which we're coming up on the 30th anniversary of Foxy Digitalis. Oh my God. Patreon.com/Foxy Digitalis for as little as $3 a month. You get a little bit extra. Ongoing support helps the cause. Thank you times a million to everybody who's done that so far. Anyway, this episode was so much fun to record. Had a blast. Lucy's the best. Can't wait to have her back. Hope you all enjoyed this one. My guest today is a composer, a songwriter, a singer, so many other things. Somebody who should be a superstar if the world was just. Is the superstar in my mind is Lucy Liu.
Thank you. Hi.
So you got a new record coming out in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Every Video Without Your Face, Every Sound Without Your Name, which is... Is there a particular story behind the title, by the way? I love the title so much.
Oh, thank you. Actually, no. it was just very literal. It's the last track, and I was just compiling videos of me and my partner at the time. Just compiling videos without his face for privacy reasons, and sounds that I had where I never said his name.
It's very evocative. So I'm, yeah, that's great. This began as like you started sketching out these songs and stuff like years ago. Like,
yes.
How did like revisiting them years later after, you know, everything that had happened in your life in the in between, like, how did that kind of reshape their meaning for you?
Yeah, I mean, they were originally about my parents. Mm-hmm. And they were originally coming from a place of wanting my parents to accept and see me as who I am. But it was funny because when I was trying to process the emotions of like our separation between like my partner and me, I was trying to write new songs and I felt like they were so contrived and they weren't reaching the certain level of like intimacy and intensity that I wanted. And I was just circling back to like songs I had written before to like kind of see what were the elements and ideas that were really propelling that intensity that I had wanted. And I was actually just like, no, I need to rework these songs. I need to reimagine these because this is exactly kind of capturing the feelings that I want to capture. And finding that parallel was really, really strange, but also comforting in some ways for me. So it was kind of like circling back to older works and seeing how much it worked and seeing how much like I wanted to work with it.
Was there like a specific moment during it, like in the songwriting process or when, you know, you were going back through it where you kind of, it's like you were talking about like realizing the sort of connection between these two separate moments. Like, was there something specific that kind of made you realize, oh my God, these are kind of connected and intertwined, and, or did it just, was it something more, I don't know, fleeting, I guess?
Yeah, no, it was actually the second song on the record. I was listening to it again. And I realized really quickly that I didn't want to change a single word. And that song was like about my mom previously. But when I was like listening to it, I was like, oh my God, this completely is exactly the feeling that I'm revisiting again with this separation. So it was that song where I was like, oh, this is it. Like, this is what I'm going to rework, what I'm going to re-record. But also it was interesting because when I tried to re-record that song, I couldn't, like, I just felt like I couldn't capture the kinds of like emotions that I wanted to in my singing. And so I kept almost all the recordings from like six years ago. Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. On kind of a different tangent, the video for Arrested is amazing.
Oh my God, thank you.
I'm curious, like, so you collaborated with, help me out pronouncing here. I don't want to pronounce their name wrong.
Paxson.
Okay. How did like that collaboration play a role in sort of even like shaping the album's visual identity, or did it at all? I guess Seth Graham did the art for the album. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually that's me. Paxson one is me. I just wanted to like create that separation because I also wanted to like work more into film. And so I don't know. I was like, oh, I want to separate like Lucy Liu and Paxson one.
Yeah.
Which is also like not my real Korean name, but that's another story. But yeah, so I made that all by myself. It was basically a projector, a camera, like my phone camera and a dream.
It's awesome. Like that blows my mind that you, okay, so I need to go back and do the intro again. Like my songwriter and video artist.
Thanks.
And real quick, just so like Orange Milk is one of my favorite labels of all time.
Yeah.
And I was so stoked when I saw this was on Orange Milk. Like, I mean, you've worked with so many killer labels, but how did you come to work with those guys on this one?
Oh my God, it's actually funny. So a few years ago, I had brought like a really rough draft of this record, still about my parents at that time, to Orange Milk. And I was like, hey, would you be interested? And Seth and Keith were both so like enthusiastic about it.
Yeah.
But while I was reworking it, I was like, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm ready to put this out. I don't feel like it's where I want it to be. And then a few years later, after reworking these, I was like, actually, I'm ready now.
Oh, that's awesome.
And they were so receptive. And I've been thinking more and more about like wanting to work with people who are enthusiastic about what I'm doing. Because I feel like that connection is so important
when
putting something out. There's nothing worse than like giving something to someone who's like begrudgingly putting it out for you.
Oh my God. I feel that. That's something I think about, like, the just enthusiasm in general. Like, I always try to be really hyped for, like, my friends. And when they're, you know, I don't know, you know, when somebody's like, I have this idea, and you're just like, fuck yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. No, I feel I'm like with you.
So often, like, there's this instinct, and I get it, like, the world is shit, but, like, this, I don't know, there's like this inclination of like, oh, like, not tear it down, but like, well, it wouldn't work because of this, or like, it's like, man, like, in the moment, like, just be hyped, be excited, like,
yeah, get excited, no, for people. I totally agree. Yeah, so it was just awesome to be able to work with Seth and be able to, like, talk to Seth about the record, be able to talk about the ideas for the artwork, the video, whatnot. Because there's just somebody who was, like, so receptive and so, like, excited to do this with me. So, yeah.
That's the best. Yeah. Well, everybody needs to get the record. It's out on March 21st. I love it. I'm going to hopefully I'll write some more about it. I don't know. as ever with your music, it's not like I can't just sit and listen to it over and over, but that's a good thing. Like, because it, you know, it's good. It takes you places. And, hey, what? Anyway, I don't know. It's been a hell of a morning here. So I'm like kind of out of it. And
oh my God, I'm you're with feeling you.
Out of the water. Well, yeah. So we're going to see where this goes. Yes. So, okay. That's the awkward segue. As ever. So as we get into the songs, we're going to start where we always do. With what is the first song that you remember?
Okay, so I have two answers to this because when I thought about first song I remember, I was like, are we talking about songs as in like there's singing involved, or are we talking about like pieces in general? Mm-hmm. But then I was also thinking about like Mendelssohn has like a collection of piano pieces called Songs Without Words. So I was like, what are we talking about? And so
there is no wrong answer. So
okay. Yeah, so I have two. So one is without singing, just like any kind of piece of music. So my grandma had gifted me this like electric Yamaha when I was really, really young. Oh, wow. And it came with like a pre-recorded set of classical pieces. I think there were like 50 in there. And I used to just like press play, and these were everything from like Bach inventions to like works by Debussy and like Scott Joplin. And so I would just like press play and like dance along to them and sing along to them, which makes no sense.
I love it.
But my favorite one, and the one that I remember most, is Debussy's Arabesque number 1. So beautiful.
So beautiful.
So famous, but I couldn't help it. It was just so gorgeous.
It feels like my And I feel like this is like a recurring theme here in a couple of these songs that I, for me anyway, like this feels like floating. Like when you hear that phrase feels like floating, this piece of music feels like floating to me.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And it's funny though, like I've played piano all these years and I've never learned that piece. Oh, wow. As much as it's meant to me, I've never learned that piece.
See, I kind of figured that might be where this came from, is it was like, because, you know, like you, this was something you remember learning or something. So that's really funny.
Yeah. Okay. But on the flip side, the first like song that I ever heard in terms of like song with singing. Okay. This is such a troll. When I was writing this down, I felt like so embarrassed, but it is what it is. Like my dad had this like CD of like classics. And one of the songs that I loved the most was IOU by Lee Greenwood.
Yes. Hey,
it's amazing.
It's a so obviously Lee Greenwood sucks. He's like he's a horrible, horrible, horrible guy. But you know, like here and I love his voice.
he's a singer, a capital voice. S singer. Yes.
Oh my God! But it's so like schmaltzy and what I don't know. I have a weird soft spot for this.
Oh my God, I do too. I was just talking about this with a friend where I was like, God, I know people hate that kind of like schmaltzy sincerity, but to me, I feel like it just hits a spot that like,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
have you seen the video for it?
No, I have not.
Oh my God, it's hilarious. You got to look at it. I hadn't seen it until I was prepping for this, and I was just kind of watching with my, like, because like Lee Greenwood is like the least sexy person. So like him doing this, being this like romantic Oh, it's great. It's
no, absurd. That's hilarious. Yeah. No, and the thing is, like, back then, I mean, I was like 6, 7 years old. Like, I didn't even know anything about anything, you know? It was just like music that wasn't classical, that was like really interesting to me. And on the CD, I remember other songs. Like, there was like Hotel California, My Girl, The Temptations. Mm-hmm. Like, so there were a lot of things, but for some reason, this one was the one for me.
I love it. I think that is amazing. Okay, well, what is the song that makes you cry? It makes you cry, or if it doesn't actually make you cry, it makes you feel like you could cry.
Yeah, okay. So when I was thinking about this, I thought about it in two categories, because I was like, there are songs where when I'm feeling upset, I want to feel this kind of cathartic release through crying.
Yeah.
But then sometimes I feel like when I'm at my lowest... It's like, I just feel so numb, and I just want to feel something.
Yeah.
Not even in terms of like catharsis, but just to like make sure that like my emotions are still intact.
Right. Makes a lot of sense.
And yeah. And I chose this song because it does both for me. And I feel like it's a song I go to for both. And it's called Pyeol by Flash Flood Darlings. I heard this for the first time, I want to say in like 2016. So I think it had been a few years when it had already come out, if I'm remembering correctly. And it was the first time I had heard music by a queer Korean artist. And the lyrics in this song hit me like none other. It hits me like a freight train, especially the chorus. And I'm going to just read it out really quickly.
Yeah.
In Korean, it's 한 번만 날 믿고 따라줘. 내 마음의 문은 닫혀 있지만 그 안에 큰 바다가 있어. 나도 몰랐던 아름다운 내가 있어. Which in English it means like, just once, trust me and follow me. Even though the door to my heart, the door to my soul is closed, inside there is a really big ocean. Inside there is a beautiful version of me that I didn't even know was there.
Wow.
Which is so powerful and so gorgeous.
And gave me chills.
Yeah. And for someone who was like trying to understand like their gender identity and queerness like during this time, hearing that in Korean then and still now is just so, it's so important to me. And yeah, it's, and the song itself is magical. I think the production is absolutely gorgeous. And yeah, it's the song that makes me cry when I want to cry. It's a song that lets me know that my emotions are still when I feel really numb.
Yeah, that's, this is actually the first time I'd ever heard this. And I didn't understand a word of it. Like I understand a few words of it because of your translation, but like just the music, like it, yeah. It just like you said, the music is incredible. It's like, it's powerful on its own. Like just, you can, that emotion is fused through every aspect of this song, like every layer of it.
Yeah. And it's, I think it's obvious that Flash Flood Darlings, especially the record that this is from called like Vorab and Tesoro, is like a huge influence on me just in terms of like capturing that intensity and capturing just like that trajectory of intensity is so important to my work. And I go back to this song a lot to think about also like how to kind of imbue that into my own music.
I need to check more of their stuff out for sure, because this is all new to me. And
I don't think they make music anymore, which also makes me sad.
Yeah, no kidding. What a bummer. Well,
yeah.
At least this is out there.
Yeah.
At least they did. Okay. Well, on the other side of that, what is something that'll put you in a better mood?
Okay. Oh my God. So I have another tie here.
Okay.
Because there are songs that make me laugh and that puts me in a better mood.
Yes.
And then there are songs that just like make me feel joyous. Mm-hmm. And okay, going to the song that makes me laugh, and I don't mean this in like a mockery, like I just, a part of me is like in awe of just like the boldness of decisions that are happening here, and I think that's what makes me laugh, you know what I mean? So that song is Blasphemy by Remy Ma.
Yes.
And the title alone is like that is magic, right?
Yes.
But the funniest, amazing. Right. And the funniest part is like when you listen to the song and you realize that the sample that she's using is the 20th Century Fox intro.
It's like so absurd that if you tell somebody about it, if somebody told me about it, like, there's no way this could be anything but awful.
And I'm with you.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And my favorite part of this song is like there are moments where her vocals cut out completely.
I know.
And I don't know why. I'm assuming that it's not like intentional, of course, but it cracks me up like none other. But it also is so interesting to me and fascinating to me. Intentional or unintentional or not intentional. Like, I'm like, why? And also, I love that it makes me, I love the feeling of just like anticipation of like more rap and just like not having it and like what's going on in that space and that, you know, that change in expectation. I just think it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I remember the first, like hearing it when it came out and, you know, hearing that 20th Century Fox like fanfare and thinking first going like, why is this so familiar to me? Why do I and then realizing what it was and just be like, oh my God.
Exactly.
How did you think to do that? It's a genius sampling moment in music.
I agree. And the other song that I had, the other song that is more so just like joyous for me is Ravel's Levé de Jour from their symphonic or choreographic symphonic piece, Daphnis et Chloé. So actually, I heard this for the first time when I was in Philly. I went to go see the Philadelphia Orchestra play. And the funniest thing is nobody was there. I guess just like nobody goes to see them. It's kind of really sad actually, but
yeah, no kidding. Gosh.
Yeah. And so like, I was one of the only people there and I remember the piece kind of reaches this climax towards the end. And I just like, yeah, I was alone. So I was one of the only people there, but I also felt like it'd be inappropriate for me to like react to it. Cause classical music is such a spectatorship.
Sure.
But I just wanted to like get up and shout because it was just so, it's one thing to like hear it in the earphones, but to hear it in an auditorium or a space, it just like you feel like your whole body is like just suddenly kind of absorbing this huge like crescendo and climax. It's unbelievable.
I saw it, the Tulsa Symphony did this is years and years ago, but they did this and yeah, it's like euphoric. It's like, it's I don't know. Yeah. It's almost like this out of body experience or something. It's so, this is like one of the most like beautiful pieces of music like ever created.
And I think it's also considered like a huge feat in, orchestration. A lot of like composers from the 20th century and 21st century also kind of go back to this piece and talk about how important it was for them. I think Stravinsky called it like the best piece ever written for orchestra or something along the lines of that. Yeah. And I'm a huge fan of Ravel, but I had mainly been only learning and understanding like Ravel's piano pieces. And so when I heard this live, it was just utterly mind blowing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I listen to it a lot, and I listen to it when I really kind of need a pick-me-up.
Yeah, there is, like, this sort of, I don't know, hopefulness to it. Not in this, like, sort of bombastic, hopeful sort of way, but just this kind of understated way that is very, very moved, like has the same, I have the same kind of reaction to it. It just kind of is uplifting.
Yeah, and I also love that it's so patient. Like the joy is so patient. It's not like super fast and quick. It's like it really requires you to just like sit with that kind of growing sensation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if this isn't the objectively greatest song of all time, Lucy, then what is?
Okay, not to do like a complete 180 from Mouse Bees, but this is okay. This is my opinion. I don't care what other bitches think. This is my opinion. And I'm not even like trolling or joking with this answer. I'm 100% like, this is it for me. It would have to be Roman Holiday by Nicki Minaj from her sophomore album, Pink Friday, Roman Reloaded. It actually pains me to this day to know that Nicki Minaj hates this song. I think she revealed it last year, the year before, as in like, I think she called it one of her worst songs, and that really hurt my feelings, but.
Wow. I didn't know that. That's.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. But sometimes artists are wrong about their own work, and that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. Often I would actually say.
Yeah. But I just think, you know, I always tell people that the first time I was exposed to experimental music was with this song in 2012 when I was in middle school. Like,
yeah,
up to that point, I had only listened to, you know, like my dad's CD, classical pieces, and then like Mariah Carey and like a lot of the R&B kind of artists that my cousins were listening to at the time. And when I heard this for the first time, I was a fan of Nicki Minaj too. I was a huge fan of her rap, her pop, everything, right?
Right. But
when I heard this for the first time, I was like utterly mind blown. I just couldn't believe that so many ideas were in one song and in like less than 4 minutes. You know what I mean? And like, it was crazy to me to hear this like wackadoodle, like pop melody in the chorus played by her mother. I mean, it's theater, right? It's like music and it's theater. It's rap. It's pop. It's also like hymns. Right, it's like, it's crazy. And I keep going back to it because I just think it's so fascinating and inspiring to think about how she's able to cover so many bases so deftly, so excitingly, and so comically, but not in a way that feels like a mockery of like her own work. And I think because it covers those bases so powerfully, I feel like this would be the music I would show like a random person who had never heard of Nicki Minaj before. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's one of the things that I really love. It feels like I'm just like envisioning them in the studio. Like, okay, but what else can we put in here? No, keep going. Like and it's just, it's like so maximalist in this. And like you said, and it's in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
It feels impossible to fit so much into a small space and it not just be this chaotic mess. Cause it's not at all. It's like there is a chaos to it, but it's a very like intentional chaos.
Yeah. And it's also like everything I've just said about the music could be applied solely to just the instrument, but also solely to Nicki Minaj's vocal performance. You know what I mean? And her writing, like one of my favorite bars in it is like, put that hyena in a freaking zoo. Pew. She's crazy. Like, it's unbelievable. It's just like, it's utterly magical. And I'm with you. It's unbelievable that she's able to do that in a succinct 4 minutes or less.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't believe that she, oh my gosh. She doesn't like it. Oh
yeah. And I also, okay. One more thing. It's not just, sorry. I mean, come on. No. Like, I think it's the best song of all time.
Keep going.
To me, it's not just the music. It's also the Grammy performance she did that like utterly blacklisted her.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy because you also see her doing this thing of like mishmashing like all these different influences of hers. She begins the performance by like singing rapping Roman's Revenge and then doing this like segue into West Side Story, I Feel Pretty. And then we have this like film component where it's like so obviously inspired by The Exorcist. And then her character, Roman Zelansky, is a gay man who lives inside of her who is possessed. It's just crazy. Yeah. It's craziness.
Like, This is experimental art.
I agree. Like, I totally agree. And, you know, there are only so many times in my life where I feel like I've been exposed to music that has completely changed the way I thought about what music could be. Mm-hmm. I think one of those times was when I heard, like, Mariah Carey for the first time when I was in, like, elementary school. But this was the very next time that did it for me.
Love it. I have, this is an amazing answer. I have no arguments. I mean, yeah. Okay. Well, on a different tangent here, what is a song that you used to love, but now you heard it recently? If you think about it now, it doesn't really do it for you.
Yeah. So when I was learning classical piano, at least like pretty intensely, which was like middle and high school, there was, you know, I had dream pieces. I had pieces that I wanted to learn by the time like I graduated and went to college. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I thought I was going to go to a conservatory, even though I didn't. But one of those pieces for me was Prokofiev's Second Piano Concerto, especially the first movement. It's between the first and fourth movement, but still, for me, it's the first movement. I just thought it was fascinating to hear. You know, I had played some Prokofiev pieces before, and I was so, like, excited by its kind of austerity, but this one had such, like, a brooding sense of energy that I felt like was so exciting to me. And even its development, which does have these moments of kind of, like, austere comedy, also is, like, also is kind of, you know, instilled with a sense of, like, you know, emotion and darkness that I thought was so fascinating. And on top of that, there's this cadenza that is so long, and it's just like the pianist doing insanely virtuosic things. And I just thought it was so beautiful, and so I just couldn't wait to play it. Mm. And learning it was fascinating too, because it is extremely difficult. I think it's considered one of the most difficult piano works ever written. It's extremely difficult, but it's also, there's such a payoff because of the way it's written and the kind of expansiveness of the way you have to play it. Mm-hmm. And I was, everything I told you right now, I told my partner at the time, and I was like, it's everything to me. It's everything I love, blah, blah, blah. And I started playing it for him. And then I was like, wait a minute. It doesn't hit me the same. Like, like, I had built this piece up so much, and I was like, actually, never mind. And I think it's been, I think it's because, like, I was so, I don't know, there are moments that felt like a little too, like, self-indulgent for the pianist, for example, the cadenza. And also, I think now I love piano concerti that have so much more, like, intricate involvement with the orchestra. And I felt like this just, I mean, this obviously had moments of that, but it wasn't as much of that because of that humongous cadenza. So, I was like, yeah, actually I've scrapped that. This That's is hilarious. Not it. God.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Okay. Well, what's a song that people hate, but you don't care because you love it anyway.
Okay. So this is a little complicated. I'm sorry. I feel like every single answer I give is like kind of complicated.
This makes for a great show episode. Trust me.
Okay. So everyone knows that I'm a lamb. And if you don't know what a lamb is, like, it means a fan of Mariah Carey. And so when you become a fan of Mariah Carey, one of the stipulations is that you are not a fan of Jennifer Lopez, obviously. And because, like, you know, it's a long history. I'm not going to go into it, but Jennifer Lopez has done a lot of shady things to Mariah Carey, not just Mariah Carey, but other artists, including like Ashanti, et cetera, et cetera. So I hate Jennifer Lopez, and nothing gave me more excitement than to see her eat shit during this Is Me Now rollout. Like, I was eating it up. I was listening to every song. I watched that film multiple times. I watched every interview, and I ate up her eating shit every single fucking time.
Amazing.
But then at the end of the year, and I'm looking at my most listened to songs, this was like top three. This Is Me Now title track was top three. And it made me think, I was like, actually, hating this hard is a type of love. Like, it is a type of attraction. It is a type of love.
Right.
And I've come around to it in that sense where, like, everyone hated it. It was critically, commercially panned. Everybody hated it. But I still come back to it because I hate it so much. And it gives me, like, a certain kind of love there.
Hey, I always say I'd rather do something that people hate than something that people are totally indifferent about. So,
yes, absolutely. And I also just thought it was hilarious that she was like doing this for Ben Affleck and then they got divorced again.
Right.
So it was like, what now?
Yeah, I know. Which I saw a thing yesterday where he was talking about he would be interested in getting back together with Jennifer Garner.
Jennifer Garner.
So, yeah.
He's just psychotic. He is. Oh my God. But so is she. Like, she's crazy.
Right. So, you know, go for it, guys.
Yeah.
Rich people. Anyway. Okay. Well, what is the most romantic song? Do you think of yourself as a romantic?
I do. But I don't know. This was kind of hard for me. I was like, I think I kept getting mixed up with like, I keep getting mixed up with like romance and intimacy. Mm. Like there are some songs that are so intimate to me, but I'm like, is that romantic? Like, I don't know. So originally for this, I had Grouper's Promise from her most recent record, Shade. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait a minute. I kept going back to Bjork's It's Not Up to You, which is my answer.
Yeah.
Which is my final answer. But I just thought, like, what is more romantic than relinquishing control and, like, capitulating? And I feel like that's what this song is about, not just in the sense of, like, relationships, but just, like, your day-to-day. Mm-hmm. And I loved it because, like, this song is also about, like, romance in a very quixotic sense. It's, like, mm-hmm. romanticizing the parts of your day that go wrong. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was, like, yeah, that's it. That is romance to me, you know, that kind of like quixotic infatuation. Mm-hmm. And I feel like she captures it so beautifully all throughout that record, but especially with this song.
Yeah. Oh, it's, yeah. I love this song. I mean, that record is like the perfect record, but this song is, it just lyrically, sonically, it captures that feeling.
Yeah. And so, some of the ways, like the way she sings some words like tremble and like tremble ever so nicely. Like it's so, there is romance in the way she sings too, the way she stretches things out and like pulls things together. Unbelievable.
Yeah. And then God. And then like when like the choir comes in or whatever, and it's like it's like the payoff. It's like, it's all just goes nuclear.
Yeah, and then she has this like, she goes back to her Wajin roots and does this like very Eastern like outro.
Yeah. What a song. Oh my God. Okay, what is a song that changed your perspective? Well, I guess for this next one, it's the same thing for the next two questions. So, change your perspective on an artist for better or for worse, and also favorite lyrics. Am I right? It's the same answer?
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, okay. For me, I guess this song has changed my perspective as an artist and my perspective on like the writings of other artists in general. So I guess it's not just about her, even though I love her, but this song is Siren by Halfwave. And the lyrics that I love from this, which are some of my favorite lyrics of all time, is, I meant what I told you. It's different now. Your pain is mine to know. Let me hold you. Oh, chills.
Yeah. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah. And it's interesting because when I was younger, even like a handful of years ago, I used to think that for very complicated emotions required complex lyrics. I just thought that for some reason. And, when I heard this for the first time and when I heard those lyrics for the first time, I realized how wrong I was.
Yeah.
Because for me, it's interesting. Like I think about lyrics as space, like space for projection, but just like space in between words, you know, the music mm-hmm. in between the words, and she creates so much space for you to apply and for you to project your complicated emotions onto this and pull something new from it. And it's made me think about how certain ideas and feelings that we think are cliche, like let me hold you, or I miss you, I want you, I love you, like those words, and those, when they're used as lyrics, they exist for a certain reason, because they capture a world of emotions that you can right. insert yours into. And so, yeah, I mean, this utterly changed the way I write, because I was like, okay, like we can distill things into more quote unquote simpler terms, and it doesn't make the emotion simpler
right
at all. Yeah,
that's, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, no, I mean, that line is so, I mean, it's like you said, it's because it's like, it's pretty unambiguous what, like, I mean, it's very direct, and it has like the weight of an entire galaxy in it.
Yeah. And for me, it's interesting, because she could have just said, it's different now, your pain is mine to know, let me hold you. Like, even that alone would have been so powerful. Sure. But for me, it's, I meant what I told you. That yeah. just, like, throws us into the stratosphere for me, where it's like, wow, this idea of, like, telling someone something you've already said and saying, like, no, I actually mean it.
Right.
Huh. Whoa. Yeah.
It's a great song, too. Just, like, musically and everything.
Gorgeous. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, also, like, the moment she sings this, when, like, everything kind of, like, lessens and decrescendos. Mm-hmm. And then it's, like, it's quieter. You only hear this, like, sub bass, and she comes in with this. It's magical.
Yeah. It's incredible songwriting.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the song that you have or can listen to the most?
Yeah, so this is Birth of Rap, B.O.R. by Lil B. Perfect song. Holy shit.
Everything about it is perfection.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines is, I fuck with Soulja Boy. Yeah, it's kind of sad because Soulja Boy said some very, like, transphobic things recently. But, like, yeah. I still think that line is, like, fucking cool as fuck. Especially, like, considering, like, when it came out. That was cool. Yeah. Yeah. I also love this video to death.
Oh my God. I know.
Yeah. And, you know, I actually, like, went through the songs that I've listened to most. And obviously, as you can imagine, most of the songs there were Mariah Carey.
Right. But I was shocked that wasn't the answer.
But the one song that trumped them all was Birth of Rap. So, yeah.
Oh my God. It's so, everything about it. Yeah. I was listening to it again and just, the production of it just, like, stops me in my tracks every time. It's so beautiful. And, like, yeah. Oh, Lil B is, I love it. Like,
a godsend.
Yeah. The greatest.
Yeah. I mean,
there will never be another Lil B.
I think this is also a contender for one of the best songs of all time. Mm-hmm. For me, at least.
I agree. No, this came out, like, what, 15, 16 years ago?
Yeah. Something like that.
Mean, it still sounds totally contemporary and current. It's yeah, unbelievable.
Absolutely.
All hail Lil B.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the last song you completely fell in love with?
Okay. So I was revisiting Britney Spears' discography because I realized, like, I hadn't heard a lot of things outside of, like, Blackout and a few of her more recent ones in totality. Mm-hmm. So I was just, like, listening through her albums. And I was going through, I think this is her self-titled, it's just Britney, right? This
record? I think so, yeah. Yeah.
And obviously, like, I love so many songs on here, but have you heard Anticipating? It is amazing.
I mean, I know I'd heard it before, but getting, like, prepping for this the other day, I was like, I didn't remember it. And it kind of took me aback. I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah. And, like, what a chorus. It's so yeah. much fun. And I've been listening to this song, like, over and over and over again. And yeah, just so exciting.
Yeah. Really, there's something stuff about it. Yeah. Just, like, it just feels good. Like, the, yes. I don't know. it's I can't even explain why. It just feels good.
Yeah, and it just made me think about all the songs that I haven't heard by like these bigger name artists, mm-hmm. just because like I've only ever listened to their hits, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I was like, oh, it's time to dig in.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Okay. What's the song that means the most to you, Lucy?
Okay, the song that means the absolute most to me is Pyori Jindane by Yoing Sketch. Which means, what does it mean? Holy shit, I should know this. Like, Pyod is obviously star. Oh my God, oh, this is so embarrassing. I'm like on Google Translate right now. Whoa. Stars, okay, that's what I thought. Stars are falling. That song means the most to me because it's a song my parents played the most. It's a song that they still play a lot. It's a song that we sing along to. We were on vacation once and like we were stargazing and we played this song and it was like so beautiful. And yeah, it just means a lot because it's interesting. Like my parents never really shared a lot of music with me. Obviously my dad had that CD. Right. I heard a lot of classical piano music because of that electric piano my grandma had given me, but they never really told me about songs that they loved, or they never played stuff for me. And that's something I always felt like I missed out on.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think talking to them later, I think they thought like, why would I be interested? Cause I grew up in the States, and why would I be interested in music from Korea is kind of what they thought. which is also funny because at the same time, they like one thing I will always, always give my parents credit for is they wanted to make it very clear to me that being Korean meant something and had a lot of cultural weight. And so they always took me to things like I was introduced to pansori because my mom took me to a kugak presentation in Korea a long, long time ago, you know?
Wow.
But at the same time, they never shared like the music from the 70s, 80s that they loved. And this is one of the very few that they've actively shared with my sister and me. And so it feels so important. And I don't know if you feel this way with your parents or even like with your daughter, but like sometimes I feel like songs can feel like something you pass down, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And to think that this is one of the very few makes it utterly important to me.
Yeah, no, I feel that for sure. I mean, in the last, so my daughter is, she'll be 12 in June.
Yeah.
And in the, it's like the last couple of years is when like she knows what I do, like that, like I'm a musician and an artist and has like some understanding of that. I mean, I think she's seen me perform once and it's just like, that's fucking weird, dude. Which is fair, like, you know, but yeah, like the last couple of years is she has like had her own sort of journey in discovering music and really learning to love different music. Mm-hmm. It's been a thing that we have, yeah, like we have really started to share. And those moments where I can share a song, I'm trying to think of, recently it was a Carly Simon song. So my daughter loves Taylor Swift, shocking, but the way I got her, like, I was like, you know, like Carly Simon is one of Taylor Swift's biggest influence. Like she talks about it and she loves Carly Simon, and Carly Simon was doing all the Taylor Swift things 30, 40 years ago, like writing her and producing her own music. And so I played her and she like really loved it.
And
it was just this, yeah, it was amazing. And so being like, I think it is something, it's a thing. Yeah. Like you said, it's like something you pass down. It's so powerful.
Yeah. But I have a question for you. Like, sure. As someone who also, cause it, you know, you write about music, but you're an artist, you make music. Mm-hmm. Do you also think about your music as something to pass down or share like with your daughter?
Yeah, very much so. Yes. Like, I mean, in different ways. So one thing, I mean, I'm only 45, so I'm not hopefully not dying anytime
soon. No, not that way.
But that is like something I was saying this to my partner. I was like, because I have hard drives just full of albums and stuff that's been released. Just like, I mean, my archives are absurd. I've been doing this since I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to organize this. So many years down the line, I don't want her to have to make sense of all of this.
Yeah.
Like, she can just be like, oh, here's all of dad's stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe there's something here. But yeah, no, I mean, when during the pandemic, when she was doing virtual school, I mean, we're still in the pandemic, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she did virtual school for a year and a half. And one of the things we did as a project is we made an album together.
Yeah.
And wow. It's still among the most like greatest things I've ever done in my life.
Oh,
and
it was
you know, like the thing that prompted it is we would take walks every morning through the neighborhood, and there was this one area, this house had a big oak tree and all these acorns like in the fall were all over the road.
Yeah.
And she would always stop and start. She loved the sound of crushing them under her feet.
Yeah.
And so we would start, you know, we would talk about like the sound of it and like, why do you like that? What is it? And so we collected a bunch of acorns and started recording the sound of crushing acorns.
Wow.
And then we started, and so, yeah, I'm like going down a rabbit hole here, but
no, that's so beautiful.
But the point is like, yes, I think about it all. And it's, as she's learning cello, it's this, you know, it's like, at what point do I show her Arthur Russell? Like, no, but
no, totally.
But it's like, you know, the line of letting her have her own experience and journey and like supporting that, but also trying to, cause she's not going to learn about like that in school, you know? Like,
yeah.
And so like right now I'm trying to be very like hands off and just like, this is amazing. This is so cool. But,
so beautiful. I mean, I was just thinking about this the other day. So my grandma passed away like a week or two ago. My grandma passed away very recently. And I just kept thinking about like, yeah, I have photos of her for sure. And those mean a lot to me, but you know, both my grandpas had passed away like a few years ago. And the one thing that bothers me the most is like, I'm forgetting what their voices sound like.
Oh man.
That has been like really hitting me hard. And I've been, especially because I'm a sound oriented person, of course. And I was like, God, it doesn't even have to be their voice. If I just had something sound related that meant a lot to them or had something involved with them, that would have meant so much to me, you know?
Yeah.
And so I've just been thinking about this idea of like passing down sound a lot because it's just something I really wish I had.
That's, oh my gosh. Yeah. That is, I relate to that so much. I mean, my last grandmother passed away. What is it? 2.5 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And I live in her, like we bought her house from her. So we live in her house. Mm-hmm. And, but I was thinking about that exact thing. I don't know, a couple months ago, how I like trying to figure out if I have any recordings of her, like of her voice or of her. She played the organ in church.
Yeah.
And I have memories of when I was like a teenager and was starting to like record my own songs and like, you know, these terrible singer songwriter songs. But I have a memory of like recording one where she played organ on it.
Wow.
And so I know that tape must exist somewhere.
Yeah.
This is back to my archive. Like I'm the most unorganized fucking person in the world. So it's in a box somewhere, but I'm determined to find that because like you, like I like sound, I'm a sound person. And so I feel like I need to have that.
And Yeah. I totally agree. It's just so important. For some people at least, like I shouldn't say for everybody, but been something I've been thinking about a lot.
Yeah. Well, one question left. And by the way, the song you were just talking about that I'm not going to pretend to try and be able to ever pronounce. That is an amazing song. Never heard this before, and it blew me away. It stopped me in my tracks.
So gorgeous. Yeah.
So gorgeous. But what is your favorite song, Lucy?
So it wouldn't be a Lucy Liu situation if I didn't bring up Mariah Carey in one of these answers about songs of my life. My favorite song of all time is Can't Take That Away, Mariah's Theme by Mariah Carey. She's had a lot of hits, but this is a song that I listen to for any situation, any occasion. If I need a pick me up, if I feel down, if I need anything, like, I keep going back to this song. It reminds me, it just reminds me of like the power of a voice, the way that she's able to just like make worlds from her voice solely, and the way she's able to let me feel a million things from just like the generosity of her singing.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just, it's my favorite of all time. And it like, it genuinely makes me emotional to like even talk about it, because it has saved me in countless, countless, countless occasions. Just because it is everything. It is everything to me.
It's an amazing song. I got endless love for Mariah. What would Lucy Liu's theme song be like?
Oh my god! You need a theme. All like my depressing ass music, like a theme. Damn.
Every artist should have a theme, you know? Like, Mariah's onto something here. I don't know. That would be, I can't even think of that. That sounds like one of the most terrifying propositions ever, actually.
I
like,
agree. Create your own theme song. Yeah, I think it's crazy that she also like put parentheses Mariah's theme. That's wild.
I know.
I don't think I have a theme song. I can't even think about that.
Yeah. Only someone like Mariah Carey could do that. Like, you know, Mariah's theme. You're like, this is for my theme. What the fuck?
And, oh my god, I think it kind of circles back to like the Lee Greenwood, the very beginning, where we talk about like schmaltzy sincerity, and this like hits that spot for me 100%.
I have talked I love like earnestness.
Yeah.
And earnestness scares the shit out of people. Mm. And I get why. Like, I understand, like, it can be a little scary, because it's very vulnerable.
Yeah.
But man, when like, and it can be, and people can be too earnest, don't get me wrong. There's sometimes it's like, okay.
Like, yeah. Like, let's relax. Yeah.
But yeah, like this kind of like, it is, it's so earnest and like, so it's like, and then to slap Mariah's the, perfect.
Yeah, no, exactly. The way to end this.
Yes. Can't get it. Well, every video without your face, every sound without your name is out on March 21st. So that's a few days after this will come out. And this was a hell of a good time.
Thank you so much, Brad. Thanks so much for having me. I've had so much fun.
Once again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to Lucy Liu. This is so much fun. Every video without your face, every sound without your name is out on Friday, March 21st on the great Orange Milk Records. One of my favorite albums of 2020. I almost said 2021. Jesus, what fucking year is it? 2025 so far. Ain't going to get much better than this. I can tell you that much. So make sure you check it out. And thank you for listening. Oh, check out Lucy's picks playlist in the show notes. Thanks for all the support. Patreon.com/FoxyDigitalis. Just keep going. Just hang in there. We're still here. Just still be here. All right. In the meantime, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.